What I am. You hear the loudspeaker? Yes. Loudspeaker is working. Okay. Okay. So what I would like you to do now is to start the process. We don't need to finish it, but I want you to start the process to compute the two variables in the model that haven't got a value yet. So going back to this, so we have two variables. That are undefined, these two variables. We define them to the requirement of the steady state. And in the steady state, nothing changed. So that means that the net inflow for all stocks must be zero. The balancing loop must be in equilibrium. And therefore, if you look at this model, this means these three equations. And now, what we have to do is to look at the equations in the Venzi model and compute the values of the variables in steady state. So, you can start in different places. So, where could you start the computation? I ask you, where could you? I gave you an example. One way is start here. This is a constant, so we know the value. From that, we could compute this. And so on and so on. That's a possibility. But could you start in different places? Could you start in different places? So what do you think? You don't need an exact mathematical answer, you guess. Yeah. Yes. Everywhere where you have constants, you could try to start and then combine information. Then you have simply to follow the path and see what happens. Let's start with this one because that's the same that I put in here. So we start with this. And then I want you to give me an answer initial process problems. How much is it? Equal to, and you have the information. Now what you have to do is, remember I told you to build a model, you should do the following. I told you here, draw the model first, and then start putting equations. And then you have constants here in the bottom, one constant. Then on the next page, page 4, the next constant, and so on. And after you finish, then you have equations. So, what is the value of initial process problems? You need only to find it. Zero point four, and it has no units, no dimension. That's what means the MNL. Okay, good. Now let's look here at the Vensim model. You could do two things now. Now, first, what do you do? You are in steady state, so initial process problems you know. So, what is the value of process problems then? Remember, we are in steady state, nothing changes, everything is. Yes, it's equal this one. Because these two are equal. In steady state. Okay. So now you know this one. Now you could ask, if I know this one, do I have sufficient information to compute here? Do I have sufficient information to compute what is that? So what would you do now? Now you have the Vensim model. What should I do in order to find out whether I should go to the left or to the right to compute quantities? So my question is, can I compute problem introduction already? Can I compute problem correction already? Can I compute both? Which one? So, what would you do now in order to see if you can compute problem introduction? Yes. Okay. You can see it here. Problem introduction is given by this equation. Actually, this equation, I believe, is also in the document here. So, let's have a look here. Problem introduction, that is this equation here. And let's see if we know everything. Unattended problem level, process level, is a constant, so we know it. It is actually this one here. Okay? Process problems we have now computed, it is 0.4. Average process erosion time, it's here, it's a constant, 40. So we can compute this. So we can write now problem introduction is equal to, and we have a division here, and we have unattended problem process level, which is 0.9, minus process problems, which is this, 0.4. divided by average process erosion time, which is 40. Okay, then we have it, and we have 0.5 divided by 40, and so on. So now we have a new value. Okay, and now if you look at Vensim, what is the next step? What could you do now that you have found problem introduction? Remember what steady state means. So you're suggesting to jump in here, but why? Why don't you look at problem correction now? Okay, I will ask now the other participant who is here. Did you hear the question? which variable should we compute now? So we have we know this, and one suggestion is to start here now. And my question is, can we compute problem correction? What did I say as to steady state? What means steady state with respect to the stocks? Okay, what does that mean? Okay. So, because the inflow and the outflow are the same, so problem correction is the same as this. So it's also 0.5 divided by 40. Okay? And that's the way you proceed here. So now we are here, and when we have this information, then we can see whether we can compute this, or we can compute this, and see what is possible, and then move through the whole thing, until in the end, we will get the values of the two variables that are yet undefined. But I leave it now to you. I mean, the point was not we will spend much time in doing that, but it is important for you students that you really do it, because then you learn the process. Okay? So, if you did that, then you will be getting this, and actually we are here, number 3, require that problem correction must be equal to problem introduction, and that's this value, 0.5 divided by 40, should be the value 0.0125 with the dimension 1 divided by weeks. And then, as you can see, meaning that we now compute problem correction effectiveness, and from that we can go and so on until we finally get a value for the variable that is not defined, which is actually a constant. So we are determining one of the constants of the problem, but we are determining in a way that will guarantee that we have steady state. And if we so continue, we will get the desired throughput. And that's what I put, these two values, they are in the model now. Let's look initial allocation to production, it should be 2,000 hours per week. Desired throughput, 1,400 witches per week. So let's look at it. Desired allocation to production. No, wait a moment. Initial allocation to production, 2,000 hours per week. Okay, and the other one, which one was it? desired throughput, 1,440. And if you put these values in simulate, as I showed you, we do indeed get steady state. No matter which variable you get, it's constant. So suppose you look at select gross process throughput graph. It is constant. The problem is I have in the memory more references. So first we have to get them out. Control panel, data set. You see I have 4 data sets. So I take this away. I take this away. I take this away so that I only have equilibrium. Now we do it again. Gross process throughput, constant. Any other variable that you want to see is constant. So problem correction effectiveness, it's constant. It has this value here. it's hard to see because it's up in the top. Anything you like. Allocation to problem correction, constant, 2000. Allocation to production, constant, and so on and so on. Everything is constant over time, it is in steady state. And now we are ready to understand changes to the model. So it's really now when we can get the insights, make changes, understand, ah, that's what happened, ah, that's what happened. So let's go back to the slides. The next thing that we can do is make a little change. And the way of doing this is to introduce a pulse. We had the pulse in the previous course, but I will repeat it. A pulse is simply a spike up that lasts extremely little time. And this simulation, which I'm going to show you now, compares, and that's the blue curve, what happens if you have a pulse on top of the desired process throughput as compared to an equilibrium. Now the problem is we do not see the red line apart from the little interval between 10 and 20 because the blue line is on top. So the red line is actually constant, 1440 all the time, and the blue line will be the result of asking for more in the desired process throughput, but only for very little time. And the simulation will show us that that's a disturbance, but the system recovers, goes back to the original state. So let's do that. And you have to do that the following way. You open the Venzi model, which you have in front of, and you look now at desired throughput. And there in the documentation, here, comments, you see different options. It says 1440 plus this is a pulse disturbance. Let me make it bigger so that you can, everybody can read it. So there you have it. This was the steady state value, 1440. And now what we add is a pulse. Remember, the pulse has two parameters in Venzi. Pulse takes the time, onset time or whatever, when the pulse happens. And here you see it is 10. At time 10, the pulse occurs. And the second one is the pulse width. And you can make a pulse that looks like this if you like. That's the width. But if you want a spike that is instantaneous, it happens something and immediately disappears, then the smallest time you can have is the time step in simulation. So we put in time step. And the other things here I explained in the previous course, Venzim give us a pulse which has the height 1. If you want another height, then you have to multiply. But the result that you get depends on the time step. The time step you choose. And you should get the same pulse no matter which time step. So what the pulse does is contribute with its area. So you multiply by the desired height divided by the time step to make it higher and higher as you make the width shorter and shorter. The product of the two is always the same numerically, no matter which time step you choose. So that's why we have 100, which is the height we want to have, divided by the time step, so that the product 100 divided by time step times time step give us 100. We want 100. So we want to make it short time, not 1440, but 1540. But it should be instantaneous and then immediately go back. So in dancing, what you have to do is you can write this or you can just copy and paste. And now you click OK. And it says the following inputs were not expected, but I use the time step. Okay. And this you have to fix yourself. So what you have to do is put a link. Here is the time step. Link it to this. And then go again to desired throughput. Click OK. And now it is accepted. So that's why there was a time step lurking there, but not yet connected, because we are using it now. And then you compare, but you shouldn't run it with the name equilibrium. You should run it with the name pulse, which I have here. You just write it or enter it, whatever you like. So you can either write pulse there or load it, because I have it already. And then click simulation. Data set pulses is. Do you want to override it? Yes. And then you see the spike, the pulse, and then you see the results and so on for the different variables. The variable that I had in the lecture was actually desired process throughput, net process throughput. So you could also go here and select net process throughput and graph, and then you get exactly this diagram. The other graph that you have has a lot of curves, but this is the one. And you are seeing here what happens to the net process throughput if you have a pulse. But the pulse itself, desired throughput, if you put it here, is this one. There you see the pulse. It is very thin because the time step is very small. If you make the time step even smaller, then the spike is even higher, but even thinner, and so on. But the point with creating the pulse this way is it should give you the same numerical results, no matter what the time step is. Any questions? Any questions to those who are outside? Special. So the reason with this pulse is you would like such systems to be stable. If you just created the pulse and the whole thing disintegrates and so on, then you wouldn't say, oh, I don't trust that. That's not what happens in practice. Unless, of course, the pulse is enormous. But at the time being, we are only asking very quickly to produce 100 products more and then go back to the old situation. And you expect the system to do that and recover. It will need some time to recover because why does it take, why is the result takes a bit of time? Why do you see this here? Let's go back to net process throughput. Why you have a pulse which is instantaneous, but why the response net process throughput is extended over time? It's a question to you. So the pulse is extremely thin, but the response of the system, you see the disturbance takes some time, actually 10 weeks approximately until it's back to normal. Why does it take that much time? What are the processes in the system that make that this system needs time to go back to the original state? Yes. If you make a higher desired throughput here, it will detect there's a resource gap. It will compute that you need more people for production. It will adjust the allocation. But this takes time. So even if disturbance is small, you have the order, adjust to the new situation. The system doesn't know that the situation will not last forever. It has already given the order. People who are doing correction or errors or security problems should now go to production. We need them. And that is something, of course, in another system, maybe you could stop it immediately if you see that's no longer necessary. But in a model here, that's an order from above. We don't know the future. Maybe those spikes come again or whatever. So you need time to adjust this, and because of that, and you need also allocation of time to problem correction, and you need time to fix the problems, all kind of things. All these impacts accumulate one upon the other, and ultimately, for the net process throughput here, even if the disturbance was just a spike that was instantaneous, the system reacts with some inertia, with some time lags, and in the end, recovers and so on. First, the allocation to produce more, and then it's no longer asked to produce more, so reallocate back. So the whole thing is like kind of a wave that goes back and forth and takes some time. You can experience with that because you could then, and you have synthesis, you have this possibility, you could change the values of the adjustment times and see what happens, and you will see the impact and so on. Okay, so the conclusion is. Yes. Yes, you can. Yes. This allocation here, let's look at this. If you look at the adjusting allocation and simulate that, then you see it goes up because of the pulse tremendously, but then it becomes negative but slowly back. So first you give more to allocation, many more hours, 800 hours more to production just to fix the high pulse. And then it goes back slowly, minus 20, so that is you are correcting back and back over a longer time until you are back to equilibrium. So it goes back and forth, yes. Yes. In this case, this adjusting allocation is positive and negative. Actually, I don't know if we can do that, but probably it should be possible. If we right-click here, we could put an arrowhead there. Yes. So this is a better model, because it shows you that the allocation can go in both directions. So you can give more time to production, and you can take time from the production. This arrow here doesn't change the mathematics. it makes it only more visible. Okay, so the next step is, what happens now if decision of the manager is, I want to increase production forever. So instead of the value for steady state, which was 1,440, which is per hour, per week, I want now 1,540. Okay, we can simulate that. So, again, go to the definition of desired throughput, and you have it here. You could figure it out yourself, but let's take this one. So we have this as a pulse now. This one defines an increase of 100 at time 10. So it looks like this. The production manager says, so far it was 1,440, that's fine. Now, starting at time 10, I want 100 more, 1,540. So let's put it and see what happens if the system is able to do that. So we take this. And replace this. And click OK. Now it's telling you, you have connected time step, but you are not using it. That's right. So we have to correct this. You take the delete here, delete the arrow, not the time step, just the arrow. Gone away. Then you put the definition, you go again to desired throughput, click OK again, and now it's accepted. And then, the simulation results file name is no longer pulse. We call it something different. I have the name from before, and I call it step 100. So we load it, and we simulate. In the control panel, we can take away the pulse. We don't want to compare with pulse anymore. Only equilibrium and step 100, close, and now we simulate, and there you see. So we are here. There you see the step. The red line is under the blue one, so you don't see it, the desired throughput. It's 1,440 until here, until the 10th week. Then it jumps by 100. And the system responds by producing what is required. The net process throughput increases over time and reaches that level. So, the manager, the senior manager, who is a bit blind to what is happening, will say, "Oi, we can produce more." But do you see there that there are problems around? In order to produce more, what do you have in this system? What do you have to do? Yes, but my question is like this. You were producing so much because you have so many people to production. Now you want to produce 100, which is more per week. So what do you have to do? And that means what for security incidents? Less time on problem correction, less time on security incident correction. So if you now look at the system, yes, you can produce more. But look at process problems, which is this thick line here. Originally it was constant, now it is increasing, and it's more and more and more. You're getting more and more and more and more security incidents over time. And what does this mean? Well, if you have more security incidents, you are having more defects. More things that you are producing are wrong. What does this mean? Look at the green curve here. It means you have to allocate more and more and more and more people to production. Even if you achieve the desired goal so much in about 10 weeks, you still have to increase the number that are producing their whole lifetime. And that's because you are not dealing well with the security incidents. You are producing more and more defects because you are producing more and more defects, but you want to have 1,540. That means you have to take more people and more people and more people, which means you get more security incidents, which means you're getting more defects. So you are now seeing this reinforcing loop. This reinforcing loop is going in a vicious way. It is making your problems bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. If you know we are blind to this, because that's what often the managers are, the manager only sees the production and says, oh, it's good, it's good. The people are working harder, but they were too lazy, whatever. Look, they can do that. Now I want to see if they can produce even more. Okay? So let's go to the desired production here, desired throughput, and put now 200 instead of 100 more. Okay? We put 200. Then we should call this not step 100, but step 200, so that we have a different run. Enter. Simulated, and again, yes, the workers can produce 200 more per week. But now look here at the security incidents, they're increasing even more. Look at how many people you have to put to production, they increase even more over time. But the guy who judges only by the throughput and doesn't care about the problems and that the people are getting overworked, could just say, okay, I can even try 400 more. So let's put it, if you are blind to that. So go to this, put 400, require that people produce 400 more than before, call it step 400, enter, and then see what happens. Now you have led the system to the total collapse. It tries desperately to produce as much as you wanted, but the increase in security problems, that meaning defective parts, is so brutal that in the end the workers cannot adjust and the production starts going down simply because a heap of bad products is being made. So that means that you are forcing working harder and harder, but the system is responding with a reinforcing loop that is increasing the problems, and in the end you cannot achieve that. Of course, in reality the people will start protesting and leaving the company before that. So perhaps to that extreme it doesn't happen, but in practice very often you are not working in the optimum, you are not doing it right, you are not paying enough attention to quality, you don't understand the issues of security well, because there are many in the background, and the question is now to find the right balance. Now this system is simple because we only consider security here as something we react to. So in reality you have also the option to protect the system so that you don't get so many problems. And this you can do. Remember, the issue with these models here is you want to understand what happened. and we understand by steps. If we had already both reactive and productive and proactive security, then it will not be so easy to understand how much the one contributes to the problem and how much the other contributes to the solution, because we are dealing with several things at once. That's why model building is iterative. You start with a very simple model that you understand, and once you have understood it well, and that's what we are doing now, these exercises, these experiments that are doing is to generate insights. And then the next step could be, okay, let's add a new element and see what happens. And when I have understood that very well, then I can add a new element and so on. So the moral is, always work from simple to more complex. Always try to understand well the simplest model before you add some new aspect to that. So don't feel tempted to say, reality is not like this. Reality, we have proactive security, reactive security, you name it, all kind of things. Then you have an extremely complex situation. You put all the things there, you simulate it, and you see curves doing this. Okay, but how much do you learn? Very little. So that's why we work with unrealistic models, but we understand what is happening. Then we add a bit more of realism, understand what is happening. And sooner or later you stop, because you cannot continue all the time. But if you are, I am doing a model for a company to solve the problem, so I will do it in steps like this, one at a time, explain what is happening so that the people understand the different mechanisms until the end they get a whole picture. Questions? And remember, this model is in Venzim here. This is Venzim models here. So if you click on that, then it gives you, I think it's a zip file where all these models are there. And you learn by playing with the models, doing these things that I told you. But you learn also by doing it yourself, and that's very important that you do that. In fact, there are some series of very nice articles right now in a journal which expresses about how to learn from models, and I could even give you access to that, and there are actually a number of models that one can do for experimenting, but they are not in the area of information security, so I am not too sure as to whether to do that or not to do that. In a sense, you can learn, some are ecological models, some are project management models, and so on. But what we could do is I could give you the articles, and then if some of you say, oh, that's interesting, could I get that model, then I can give you the model. Okay, so we'll take now a 15 minutes break until 4:15. Okay. Now I think I need a coffee.